Kids sometimes say the craziest things. But let's be honest, if you've worked in the profession of supporting children, there's a good chance that that is your favorite part of the entire gig.
Annie wants to tell you what's happening in her class. What are the caterpillars doing?
I go learn how to make a butterfly.
It's pretty exciting, huh?
With a chrysalis.
Yeah, they make a chrysalis. Which, what is a chrysalis?
It's a house.
It's a house for the caterpillars? Uh-huh. And they make a chrysalis and they sleep in it?
Uh-huh.
And then what happens?
Oh, it's a cocoon. When they cover the eyes, it turns into butterflies.
They turn into butterflies. But how do they get out? What do they say when they come out?
Cocoon.
Cocoon. So they make a little hole and they wiggle out. And what do they say when they come out of the chrysalis?
Cocoon.
Cocoon. I can't wait to see it happen.
Uh-huh. It got me down picking me up.
Seeing the world through the eyes of a child is perhaps the best gift you can be given. In terms of preparing kids for chronic illness, though, it does come with its own set of hurdles. How do we decipher what our children are saying, the words they're using to describe it, and what they are actually understanding? Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting caregivers and their families navigating chronic illness.
I am joined here today by my dear friend and colleague, Danielle Coleman, and I am so excited to share in a really important conversation as a child life specialist, but also looking at it in the duality that we both share as mothers, just the importance of deciphering kids speak and how to interpret what is being processed versus what is the important information we need to make sure our children are understanding when we are having those crucial conversations. And I'm going to let you meet this wonderful person.
Well, thank you for having me. As Julie said, my name is Danielle. I am been with Borners and Rorys in the Houston location now for 2 years. I come from Texas Children's. I was in the outpatient hematology oncology unit there for 7 years. And so I am a mother of two. I have 2 3-year-olds right now. My oldest is adopted and my youngest is biological. So for 4 months out of the year, I have twins. And right now they're my twins.
That's so fun. I just think that's such an amazing, unique thing. Yeah.
It's something.
It's it a mess. That's a busy age for sure.
It's a busy age, yes. But it's been really fun. They're getting into that imaginative pretend play right now. So like today I walked up to the playroom and they're like, we're playing library. And I was like, I want to play library with you. And they had like this special language and they're like, no mom, like this is our time. And I was like, okay, this is your time.
Mom out.
Yes.
In our topic today of talking about kids speak, and I think maybe for a lot of our parent listeners, it might be a great place to start with what we as child life specialists even kind of define as kids speak. And so I thought maybe I'd have you kind of just in your most simplified version of what are we for today's purposes going to be defining kids speak as?
So I think I define kids speak as what the children understand at that age, right? So kids speak varies at different age ranges. For that younger age, it's very simple, concrete language that maybe they understand or maybe they don't quite understand. And so it comes out differently than what we would, how we would say it. Like they might not be able to pronounce the word correctly, or they might misunderstand what it is altogether. Okay, guys, what is the job of a doctor?
To poke.
To poke? Why does he give you a poke?
Because to keep our bodies safe and healthy.
Very good. And why do we get, and what is in the poke?
Blood.
Oh. Versus as they get older, that vocabulary gets larger, but that imagination also gets larger. And so what does those words then mean to them? And what does the weight behind those words hold is different for at every age group and every situation.
The context of what we do through Wonders and Worries, the collaboration we have in working with parents, having those important conversations of maybe there's a new diagnosis in your family, or maybe there is a new treatment plan that's being introduced, or perhaps you are looking at withdrawing care or moving to more of a complementary care or a home health situation, or you are looking at transferring possibly to a procedure that involves a long hospital stay, sometimes having those important conversations is necessary. And for some of our kids, we don't want to take away that level of imagination and play. Obviously, we love that. That is their language and their communication. But with that, we also want to make sure that that key information that we are hoping that they understand is seeping through in the right ways. Our goal for this podcast today is helping parents feel confident that the words they are giving their children and the language that they have practiced with their child life specialist or with their physician or their church leaders or teachers or counselors is actually being received by the children that live in their home. We are here to help them and help guide them in case they're maybe feeling like they're getting stuck. What other tools are available can help with them still retaining that kid speak, but then also getting the support they need to make sure the information is going through. In terms of development, the ages and stages we're going to be talking about today, what we're talking about and what we're looking for in terms of their ability to understand the language.
So I think just starting with that younger age group of toddler and preschool, that is going to be your age group where you use that very simple, concrete language. So with this age group, a lot of times for ports, a lot of parents don't call it a port. They actually call it a bump on the chest. And so this is a great age group where, again, that kid speak of, if they don't need to know the medical term that it's a port, they just need to know that there's a bump on mom's or dad's chest, and that's how mom and dad are getting their medicine, right? And so that's a form of kid speak at that younger age group. And then you move to the more that school age group where they do have a little bit more understanding of the body and anatomy and what it means to go to the doctor, what it means to keep our body safe and healthy, and what the means behind that of getting medicine, going, having physicals. And then you have adolescent, your teenagers, very much an adult abstract understanding of the world and of the body, and that death is final, and there is a lot more concern and more weight behind that kid speak language. A lot of times when I talk to parents about having clear, honest conversations, they don't want to use the word cancer. And so I always like to ask them, what is your children's exposure to cancer? And I always like that word. I always like to start there because we as adults put that weight behind the word cancer. We've had that exposure to death with cancer, to treatment with cancer. But children, it might just be a new word, right? And so we give it the weight that it needs. And so at this time, we want to say that it's cancer and mom and dad, or dad is going to the hospital to get the treatment to make their body safe and healthy. That's the weight that we give it. And so just depending on the age is how detailed we get in that conversation.
Exactly. And I think that there are definitely times when I know personally, I've seen as both a parent and as a child life specialist that when you are in a time of stress, either the parent is in a time of stress or even your family system as a whole, maybe a new diagnosis or even a divorce or a stressful small situation, maybe a moment where your child is feeling very dysregulated. Here's the tiniest of example. If we are in a thunderstorm and my child is feeling kind of scared and I am trying to tell them, okay, the tornado sirens have gone off. We are in Texas after all. And it is time for us to make sure that we put on our bicycle helmets and we have shoes on our feet and we're going to go in our downstairs bathroom. If my child, even though they might be at that stage of moving from school age towards middle school, really progressing into that more abstract understanding that the likelihood of that happening is not very imminent versus a kid who would be a younger, more elementary age, they're going to think tornado at our house right now. So they're able to process the longevity of, okay, I might have time, or this is a protective thing we're doing. This is a worst case scenario. That's more your older age of thought, kiddo. But if they are feeling highly dysregulated, which is the word that we use professionally for stressed, we might find that my child that normally would be able to kind of think ahead and say like, well, the chance of that happening is actually pretty small and probably isn't going to happen, they might tend downward and say, oh my gosh, the tornado is right here. Or, oh my gosh, what happens if our roof blows off? Like, things or concerns or worries that they wouldn't normally have because they're coming from a situation of high stress. And obviously, it varies by your child and it varies by the situation on hand. I think there are so many different factors go into it. So it's using what factors might be affecting their normal stage of development and kind of pulling it back and saying, okay, yes, we know that they are at an age where they might be moving more abstract, but we are going to individually treat where they are at. And I love that as child life specialists, we do get to collaborate with our family and focus on that family-centered care.
I think everybody comes with some sort of history, right, and baggage. Development and their delays definitely can affect their understanding. A lot of times when that crucial conversation happens, we have to remember that that child brain is so egocentric still, right? And it's still going to be very much about how does this affect me? How is this going to implement my day-to-day life? And so making sure that when you're having that conversation that you are considering their life and how it's going to be affected. So with wonders and worries, I've actually seen more magical play and more magical thinking than I have in the hospital setting. And I wasn't prepared for that. And I think it's because when children are in the hospital, they're more so exposed to the medical equipment, the medical procedures, they live it themselves versus children that have parents with a serious illness, they don't live it every day themselves. And so they get the information secondhand. They get it through TV shows. And with COVID, I think that adds a layer to it too, because these kids aren't allowed in the hospital. So it's really, truly coming secondhand. And so it leaves that gap of imagination to just fill right in. And so I wasn't prepared for all the magical thinking that I see nowadays. And so magical thinking, to kind of define it, is when children usually have a more robust vocabulary, a more robust understanding of the world, but they still are in a phase of great imagination. And so a lot of times we say that might cause my mom's cancer because I hit my brother. And that's not the truth, right? I actually had a client myself, a great example, loved gummy worms and gummy bears. Stopped eating them because he thought his dad eating gummy worms and gummy bears, which is what they bonded over at the end of the day, caused his stomach cancer. And so having to back up and go through the basic bodies, the cells, and explain that you did nothing to cause your dad's stomach cancer and dad did not cause it to have stomach cancer. And so that they can reconnect and have that bond again is really important to them. Ironically, just an hour before this podcast, I had a kiddo. We were talking about radiation, and he's very much an information kind of kid. He wants to find out what is happening to his mom. So he gets on Google, and he's 12, and he goes, so they're going to cut her open, they're going to put a rod in there, and then they're going to fry everything. And I was like, it's really graphic.
Barbecue.
Wow. Back up a bit. And so we're talking about microwaves and how it warms up our food and connecting that to radiation and how it might leave a sunburn and it might leave a little rash where mom's skin is, but there's no procedure involved in it. And mom can even take a nap if she wanted to. But again, I think it's that secondhand knowledge that we see. But also in the playroom, I see it a lot in that sort of open-ended play. Right? When we allow kids to just have access to medical equipment and access to a doll and see what they do with it. And a lot of times it's putting needles in the wrong place and band-aids in a different area. Or sometimes you see aggression come out during that play because they're so mad at the illness. Not even just in words do we see magical thinking. We see it in their play as well. And so providing that adult-led play after that, where you provide a little education to follow up with the misunderstanding that they might have to help kind of clear that up.
And you know, sometimes you really think that a kid is just getting it right and like so understanding. I remember a kiddo who was in fifth grade, and we were doing part of our curriculum at Wonders and Warriors is we make blood soup. And I remember that we were just making blood soup and talking about the parts of the blood and how when we are going through treatment, how our red blood cells can be affected and our white blood cells and, you know, our platelets and what that means. And we're using the real terms, but then to make the soup actually. And if you've been a part of our curriculum or your child has, or you're a child life specialist listening in and you've made blood soup, you know that we use food to be able to depict this. And so we were using marshmallows and red hots and rice and but we're talking as we're doing this. I'm like, you know, we're using red hots today, but these are representing the red blood cells. And that is the oxygen in our blood. And that's the energy of our blood. And that's what helps us run fast and have the ability to be able to do things like walk and have a full day and all of these things. And then we were talking about our white blood cells being our soldiers and what they do. And this kid is 11, and so almost newly 11, but 11, and just such an information seeker and so engaged, and knows, is able to repeat so much of what they're hearing that I think that they're internalizing it as well. And mm-hmm. So we finish the session and we walk out, and he turns to his dad and he says, "Dad, did you know that you have marshmallows in your blood?" And I'm like, "Oh no, no, come back, come back. That, no, that's not it." And then I had to say, "Oh, well, you're right. But remember, the marshmallows are representative of the white blood cells." And it was just like that reminder of even our older kids who we think are getting it. Sometimes it's that level, right, that we talked about where they still kind of creep back into that imaginary, magical, "I'm going to hold on to those marshmallows," and just really stay in that concrete world. And it's okay to say like, "Oh, you didn't get that. We had some miscommunication. We're going to have to go back and sort that out a little bit." And that's okay. If you have been in the hospital or in healthcare for a long time, if you are a teacher listening in, I know that you know firsthand all the incredible things that kids say, that while their intentions are headed in the right direction, they just don't quite have it right. And it is the very best. Our director, Kim Fryer, who is so seasoned in the profession, had the best, my favorite example of a kiddo she was working with a long time ago, back at her days at, I believe it was at Dallas Children's, but she was talking about a kiddo that she was speaking with who was talking to her about sickle cell. And she kept saying, "You know that disease, sick as hell. I've got that disease, sick as hell." And she was like, "Oh, sickle cell. Yes, sickle cell disease." And it's just, while that kid did feel that way, it's just funny to think that's how the wordplay happened in mm-hmm. their little brain. And it sounded like that. And they felt like that. I love the way little kid brains work. We can build off that. And parents, you can build off that. That's okay. You don't have to change the language. You can still give the information and keep the cute language, but you just can build upon it as well.
Agreed. My funny story has to do with my own kids as well. Again, keeping that basic knowledge of three-year-olds, we always say the doctors, police officers, firefighters, their jobs are to keep us safe and healthy. And so, Mom, we're driving back from the library, and I get pulled over, and my oldest daughter, she's like, "Roll down my window. I want to say hi to the police officer too." And I'm just like, "Mom's about to get a ticket, but that's fine." And so we roll down her window. I roll down my window. And before the police officer can even make it to my window, she like bobs her head out and goes, "I'm safe and healthy. You don't need to be here." You're right. You are safe. You are healthy. Then we had to have a conversation about maybe Mom wasn't driving as safe as she should have been. That's their job, right? But how is it their job? And how do we get kids to that end point? I think what I love best about Kids Speak is just the raw honesty and confidence that comes behind it. A lot of times it's, "I know this, and I know this to be right." And how do you, as an adult parent or a child specialist, teacher, professional, gently guide them in the correct direction without hindering their confidence and bolstering them still too. I think that's the challenge that we face. It's like, you're on the right path and you're correct, but how do we get you just a little bit over, if that makes sense?
And I love how it shows the perception of children. It shows how much they are tuned in. I had a kiddo that was in second grade, and he kept talking about the pain medicine that my mom takes every day. And I kept being like, the pain medicine? And they were like, no, the peeing medicine. I was like, the peeing medicine. And I was like, oh, the diuretic. That's right. That's a side effect of the diuretic. Your mom goes to the bathroom a lot in the morning. And it's the peeing medicine is what this child referred to it. But it shows they knew that their mom took a diuretic every day for their heart. And that diuretic caused them to expel fluids from their body and in the form of going to the bathroom. And so they knew that they could not go to the park or to the movies or out with friends until after mom had flushed the diuretic out of her body. And that was in the morning. So mom had to pee a lot and then they could go do that. And so they said that mom had to finish her pee medicine. That to me shows so much how our little people care so greatly that they are just soaking in every tiny little detail about their parents and their caregivers who they love so, so much. So even for our most guarded parents who feel like, I don't want to tell my children because I don't want to scare them, or I don't want to take away any part of their childhood and give them worry, your children already know. They are already seeing all of this. You're just giving them the words to know and better understand what it is so that it's not scary anymore. I feel like kids speak is the perfect representation that confirms that for me. I know when I hear kids say phrases and it perfectly describes the action, I'm like, gosh, you are so intuitive. Look at how much you are paying attention. For our parents, it shows that look how smart your children are. They are watching every move you do because they are learning from you. And why wouldn't they? Because you taught them to walk and to talk and to eat and to do go potty and to do all the things. Why wouldn't they be watching you all day long? So of course they're going to be watching you if you are taking medicine or taking extra naps or walking with a limp or going to the doctor more often. They catch that too because they've been watching you their whole life. Kids speak is a wonderful tool because it lets us know how much they are also cluing into what's going on around their little world.
And just to add on to that, I always, when having this conversation with parents, often say, me, even as a parent too, I mean, if I could, and wrap them up in bubble wrap and protect them from everything. But that's not an option, right? They're going to face difficulties throughout their whole life. So why don't I get ahead of those difficulties as much as I can and teach them the language that they need to be armed to face those difficulties. And I find that when you have that conversation, it's very empowering to say, like, you have this ability right now as a parent to teach them these different things. So let's do it.
What challenges would kids speak present when we're having crucial conversations with kids?
I think the challenge is making sure that as child specialists, as parents, it's clear, honest language. To say that is to make sure that you're using the correct verbiage when necessary. So instead of saying big sick, you want to say cancer. And it, depending on the age, it can be bump instead of port, but explaining the purpose behind the bump or the port. And again, using that clear, honest language. And I think the best way to also incorporate clear, honest language is to bring in different tools. Those tools being pictures, books. If you have the medical equipment around you, letting them see it, letting them touch it, letting them feel it, to again bring in that concrete thinkers. Even if they're on that cusp of abstract thinkers, like we already kind of discussed, oftentimes they regress because of the stress that they're feeling. And so I think that's the biggest challenge with kids speak is making sure that what they're saying, that's okay that it's pee medicine, but do you understand the reason behind the pee medicine? it's okay that it's a bump, but you understand the reason behind it.
So if it's a word that a child is using that might be something that is common language in your household, to really stop and differentiate. I think you touched on that beautifully, Danielle. Differentiate how this is unique from maybe a common word that they already know. So if you do offer a child the actual word cancer, and you say cancer every time, but they are just refusing to latch on to that, and that is not a word they want to put in their vernacular, that is okay. They do not have to say cancer. If we say it and we have said it and we know that they hear it and they still want to call it a big sick, that is okay. You just have to make sure that you can differentiate how this sickness is unique to other sicknesses that they know. This is not contagious. This is not something you can catch by giving hugs or kisses or sharing a drink. This is not something that you gave to mom or dad. This is not something that can be taken away with a vaccine. Things like that, things that they would associate with other illnesses that share that same word. So we talk about tools that we use in everyday life to help kids kind of process through that kid speak. And if you are working with a child as a child life specialist or as a parent, and you're talking to them maybe about going to your checkup or going to go stay at grandma's while you have a procedure done, or perhaps a new medicine that you're going to be taking that smells really funny or makes your hair fall out, or they can't touch and you have to lay flat on your back for a certain amount of time. If there is something like that that you're speaking with your children about and you're having trouble feeling like you're breaking through with the language, what are other tools that you can pull in your household that will help maybe a child better understand?
I think there's a lot of tools you can pull in from your household. One of them being just a plain Jane doctor kit, right? I think a lot of it, parents have dress-up corners or dress-up kits, and pulling it in and talking about the purpose behind each tool, right? So the stethoscope is to listen to your heart. The pulse ox is to look at the oxygen throughout your body. And what is oxygen? What is the heart? Just really digging in and finding out the job and the purpose for all of those parts of your body and the job of the roles that those tools have, right? I think that is one that you can definitely pull in. An old school one that it's kind of hard to pull in nowadays, but from my training, gosh, feeling really old right now, is a cord phone. I was always taught, and I think you are too, about a cord phone can be the spine, and that's how we get the fluid out, is by having them do a C-shape with their backs. And we can talk about the purpose of the spine. But
I have an adaptation for that, though.
You please tell me.
I do. We use slinkies. So I use slinkies.
Great.
I use those little ones, especially the ones that you get in party favor packs or at Halloween. So if you ever come across those and your kid is not interested in them, snatch it aside. Those little tiny slinkies make great things to show C-spines. And especially if you're having to do a position where they might be having any sort of injection or having to do a position to show the different vertebrae, that's a great little...
So you just blew my mind. I love that.
Another thing you can also do if you have it is a twisty straw. If you have any of those twisty straws, anything that has a gap that you can show. We've done it with foil, where you roll a foil like a noodle and then you can twist it. Pieces of pasta, you can use coiled pasta. But I really think foil can be the most magical at-home tool, because you can make any bone. It can be an art project for your older kids where you're like, today we are going to make a femur and we are going to talk about how I have to have a femoral osteotomy, and we are going to be explaining what that is, and we are going to make the femur and talk about how we have to take the little bit off the top. And it just is really a way to use art that you have around your house to be able to pull kids in. If you have kids that really need that tactile input, shaving cream, put it on your table, on your kitchen table, like just spray it on the kitchen table and it makes a giant mess. And so instead of just writing on a normal piece of paper to draw maybe a picture of your heart or your lungs to show how you have fluid in your lungs. Instead, draw, like, look up on Google a picture of your lungs and draw to the best of your ability with your fingers on the shaving cream on your table, or let your children do it. And then you can kind of color one side in and leave it white, and the other side you can erase it and make it look clear. And you can talk about how we have to have a special machine that's put in to help drain the fluid, and so that then they can erase the white foam to, so they can see how that goes away. So there are lots of different things you can use around your household that can help kids process in a way that is fun and not threatening and free. And the best thing about shaving cream is it cleans your table because it's a soap. And it can get markers and spaghetti sauce and things that never come up ever. They just come up magically. And so you're getting a free kid cleaning your kitchen table, which is amazing. Because if I asked my child, my teen child, to clean my kitchen table, they would roll their eyes. But if they got to play in shaving cream, they might be a little bit less tweeny teeny about it. And I'd still come away with a clean kitchen and a child that understood a little better about my chest tube going in. So
I love that little fun parenting side fact. Yes. For the lungs, a fun activity I like to do, again, very accessible stuff at home, is to use your hands to represent the lungs. And so you dip one of the hands in lotion or honey or things like that. And then you can dip that hand that has the lotion or the honey in it into like confetti or like beads and different things like that, and talk about how having this excess mucus in our lungs is not healthy for our lungs, and then things are sticking to it and that's not good for our lungs. So those are another great, easy one that's around the house too. And you were saying foil for bones, Q-tips are a yes. great bone one too. To teach x-rays and like why our parents need to go in to take x-rays of their bodies or MRIs or CT. That's a great way of explaining that. And it doesn't have to be a human body, right? It could be a dinosaur body that you make out of Q-tips.
A great thing you can use for casting materials at home is if you want to save your paper towel rolls or your toilet paper rolls, and you can cut them like just on one side, that makes a great cuff. You can use that for a blood pressure cuff or a casting, and then you can use it to wrap with saran wrap, or you can take, you know, torn up pieces of paper that you dip in water, and you can use that to make a cast and it will harden. And there are so many different fun things that you can do to help your kids process what they're seeing maybe on a caregiver at home. I had one child who had their dad had diabetes and had a really bad dog scratch on his leg that ended up going gangrenous and had to get removed, because for many adults that have very, very aggressive diabetes and unmaintained diabetes have issues with circulation, and had to end up having his knee down removed. And for a while, the child was very worried that it was because dogs give you diabetes. And that was, again, that magical thinking, right? So he went from loving dogs and their family pet to being terrified of dogs because he did not want diabetes. And so it took a lot of at-home education to help the child explain that wounds and wound care comes with cleaning. And so they did a lot of fun cleaning activities with water and water squirters and syringes and basting things. Anything you use to baste a turkey breast or chicken rotisserie or anything in your kitchen, you can use to clean. And that's what they did at home. They use that just as talking about how you use that with all your cleaning, how if your body isn't able to clean because it's already sick, then that's why it wasn't able to heal itself, not because of the dog. And through time and through those repetitive activities and repetitive teaching, the child was able to grasp, oh, this is because of the illness, not because of the dog. It takes time and repetition and tools, but they get there. I think it helps to have that as an option for a lot of our parents. I feel like that could be a podcast altogether. Like, if you have to talk about heart disease, these are things in your home.
Right. No, that's a great segue. Yeah. And another one that you reminded me with the dog bite and the wound is a really big magical thinking one that's been coming up with me is COVID, being like a parent catching COVID and parent having cancer at the same time. And so the COVID goes away, and they think because the COVID went away, so did the cancer. And so having kids come into my session saying, my parents all better. That's an update I haven't heard yet. And so again, tools that we have usually in our house to teach about germs versus our cells, you know, we can use dot markers to teach about cells. So red dot markers for red blood cells, yellow dot markers for white blood cells, orange for platelets. But then germs, you can actually make, I think Kim, our program director, taught us this one, of a COVID germ by using model magic and golfing tees. And so talking about the difference between cells and cells that stop working the way they're supposed to and germs that you can catch, and just kind of constantly reinforcing. That's why we wash our hands, because germs live on our hands. We can't catch cancer, but we can catch germs. Also, the best part about making the COVID germ with the bottle magic is that once it hardens, if you want, the kids can like throw it against the wall and shatter it, or get a hammer and shatter it, and kind of get some of that aggression that a lot of people kind of feel with COVID and how it just keeps kind of being a burden in our lives.
There are so many tools. I feel like for a lot of parents, I have seen so much ingenuity and that out of the box thinking because we were forced to. It's not that I don't think we would have gotten there on their own, because I definitely think that parents are just capable of infinite amounts of ingenuity. But this challenge of not being able to leave your home and not being able to have your kids come into your doctor's appointments with you or visit you at the hospital, it has forced families to just bridge education at home in a way that's never been done before. And while I hate that for families and that they had to carry that stress, I have seen so much ingenuity. And I really encourage you, if you are feeling, if you're listening to this and feeling like, gosh, I just really want to talk to my child, but I don't know how, and you're not connected to a child life specialist, and you are living in an environment where maybe you don't know who to talk to, you can always reach out through a helpline. And we can help guide or help find you somebody in your area that you can talk to, at least to be able to have the tools to start having these conversations at home with your children. Because I guarantee you it can be done.
It's not easy being a parent.
No.
It's a lot of hats to wear.
It is. Let's take a minute and talk real quick just about open-ended play versus adult-led play.
Yes. Yeah, so the difference between adult-led play and just free play is that free play allows for the adult to take a step back. So with free play or open-ended play, it's where the child is the driver. The child leads the play. There's no rules besides safety rules, right? We don't hurt ourselves or other people. These are still rules within the house of like, we don't color on the walls, but the child decides what is played with, how it is played with, and your job as caregiver is to support that play and just to be along for the play, not to ask questions, to meet that affect, and just to be there as a companion throughout that play. Now, adult-led play, on the other hand, is where maybe the adult and the child are both in the driver's seat, and there's more of a mission to the play. There's more of a goal to the play, and the goal being whatever you're teaching, if it's typical developmental ABCs, 1, 2, 3, or learning about mom and dad's diagnosis, or learning about a certain procedure, or why mom is losing her hair. And so like a great example of like adult-led play would be Play-Doh actually has a hair salon where you can like squeeze down and grow the hair, and then the kiddos can cut off the hair. And so what a great way at home to teach why mom and dad shave their head, and letting them have that control and letting them cut that hair off. Still play, but play with a goal, play with a mission.
How might a child signal to the parents that they are needing a break?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times we have to encourage parents to know that they know their child best, and that they know when their child is disengaging, and disengaging can look different for different children. And so being fidgety, lack of eye contact, or just being very blunt and wanting to change the conversation, or wanting to almost just leave the situation as a whole. And so very much respecting that this has been too much for them. I think a lot of times we have to encourage our parents that you sat down for this adult-led play. You sat down for this conversation with a mission, and this mission might not have gotten all the way through. You might not have gotten the point across, but if you keep pushing your child, the point will never get across that they need that break, and that the break can be 5 minutes or it could be 5 days, but just knowing that there is going to be a time and a place to finish that play and that conversation when your child is ready.
The microbursts. I love the idea of play happening in microbursts. And even for our teenagers, that play can happen in silly games and, you know, shooting hoops outside at night or going on walks in the evening or, you know, things that are in their world, maybe not structured so much around, hey, let's sit down and do this. You know, let's drive through Dairy Queen at 10 o'clock before they close. Like, let's go do that. And that's the unstructured time where you get to have kind of maybe a follow-up check-in and get to have that little microburst of a follow-up conversation to be able to check in and have that. Like,
just allowing for that organic conversation to happen in a safe place. And I think a lot of times, with especially teenagers and school age kids, when their hands are busy, it's when they almost allow themselves to have permission to have that conversation. So around the dinner table, and, you know, like you said, playing basketball, going on a walk. I have a great example of a dad. His wife was in the hospital for a couple months, and he had a four-year-old daughter, and they developed a routine called pillow talk. And so every night they would lay on the bed, have their normal bedtime routine, but at the end of the day, he would say, "What questions do you have about mommy?" And so it was either she had a ton or she says, "No questions." And then their bedtime routine was over, but he incorporated it in, and so that it could just be part of this natural ongoing conversation, that it wasn't awkward, it wasn't weird that we were talking about mom, just part of the everyday nighttime routine. So kudos to that dad.
I had a mom that I worked with. She had an 8-year-old son. Every Saturday for 30 minutes, and they called it Lego Learn. And they would sit together and they would do Legos. And it was him directed. But the only caveat was that during that 30 minutes, she would say, "What would you like to learn about my cancer today?" And the whole time that they would build Legos together, whatever he wanted to build, sometimes it was they were working on an actual project with the booklet they were flipping through. And sometimes it was an ongoing thing when they were working on one of the Star Wars, like AT-AT walkers. And if he was like, "Can we keep building?" And she was like, "Great. Do you want to keep doing a Lego Learn, or do you want to keep, or do you just want to do Legos? Just keep building." And sometimes he was like, "No, I have more questions." And that was him child directing, advocating for more questions. And other times it was, "No, I just want to do Legos with you." And it was great. He had that control at that point. But just giving him that predictable space that he knew on Saturdays for 30 minutes, Lego Learn is going to be my time to ask any question I want for mom. It's not going to be met with embarrassing her or hurting her feelings or anything. And I can look down and I don't even have to make eye contact, and we're both doing something. And if I have a question and she doesn't know how to answer it, she can build it out of Legos and use it as an example to say, like, "Oh, well, you're talking about, you know, this part of my body," and she can build it in Legos, you know, or like make a whatever. So she has tools there too to help her. I just think that's really such a great example of how we can work together to give predictability and meet children where they are in play, but also give parents that supportive outlet of a tool that also can help them teach.
And also kudos to that mom too. I mean, I know that me as a mom, we try for 30 minutes of childhood play every week. And it's hard.
It is
hard. And I'm not going through treatment and dealing with side effects. And it's hard. So kudos to any parent that makes that an effort and succeeds, because there's going to be hiccups. There's going to be days that it doesn't happen.
And we had prepared him for that in our sessions in the playroom. I had said, "Now, if mom has to go into the hospital, the plan is for you to go stay with your aunt. An aunt knows about Lego Learn, and if it falls on a Saturday and mom is able to FaceTime, she will still do Lego Learn with you. But if she is not able to FaceTime, if she is with a doctor or having a treatment or needs a nap, your aunt also knows about Lego Learn. And so that is a time where you and her will still get that 30 minutes to play. So knowing that there was that handoff and there was that communication between adults, we talked about kids being egocentric, right? And they still want to know how that illness will affect me. He knew that the sacred playtime with his mom was still going to be protected, regardless if she was in the hospital, regardless if she was even the one who was doing it. She shared that with someone else in the family. So then it truly became legacy because other people knew about it. I think that there's a lot that we can do to be able to create a space of learning that includes other people, but it doesn't necessarily have to be other people all doing it. It can be one person, but then we have stand-ins and we have other people there to fill in the gaps as needed.
I mean, it just goes back to that concept of a village, right? Especially during a time when we ourselves can't fulfill all those parenting roles. And so where can you pull in on your village?
And Danielle, I'm so glad you're in mine. I love having you here. You're such a wealth of information. It's weird.
Oh, you're so kind.
What our people don't know is that really, I think we've only been in the same space twice, once. And
I think one time.
In our whole professional life. But I feel like I've known you my whole life. So it's such a gift to have you as my guest today. Yep. If you are in the Houston area, go visit her in our office because she's a gem and she will help you and guide you and support you. And if not, just call our helpline and talk to her there.
Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast today. Please continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For any recommendations or topics you would like to see covered, please feel free to send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.